It's the Book of the Week.
And it's that time of the week again. Yes, it's time for Portsmouth Authors Collective and Victory's Book Club. We always have a guest author. Today, it's Christine Lord. I'll tell you a little bit about her. Christine is a Royal Television Society award-winning freelance journalist and filmmaker. She started working in the media age 16 at Portsmouth News, and she was the last journalist to interview the late Patrick Moore. Christine has interviewed celebrities including Arj from The Only Way Is Essex, Raymond Blanc, and a young Arnold Schwarzenegger. As a journalist, she has faced hundreds of riot police in South Korea and interviewed bereaved parents and drug dealers. She has worked for the BBC, Channel 4, BBC America, NBC, Sky, Channel 7, Australia, RTE, Nippon TV. My goodness gracious, what a career. She has written features and contributed to The Male Woman's Own, Therapy Today, The Times, and The Mirror. Her latest documentary, which she produced, researched, and filmed, is Cows, Cash, and Cover-Ups, available by streaming on Amazon Prime. Her podcast, The Cows Are Mad, available on Radio 4, BBC Sounds, has had more than 4 million listeners. My goodness gracious. She has recently finished filming a one-hour documentary about food, corporations, and the environment, which will be broadcast internationally later this year. Welcome to Christine Lord.
Hello, Bob, how are you?
I'm all right. That was a bit of a mouthful for me. You've had a massive career by the sounds of it.
Yes, a very varied career, and worked in many places with many different people and many different newsrooms, and also interviewed extraordinary people. I always think the best interviews actually are ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances.
They make the best stories. I like that. Let's talk a little bit about your book, Women at War. I'll give you a little bit of a blurb on it. In the spring of 1944, World War II is coming to a bloody end, and 14-year-old Greta is running for her life across the desolate German countryside. Continuously moving to survive, Greta pretends to be a Jewish survivor, a Swiss national, and a nurse, and anything to stay alive and escape from her family's Nazi connections. Berlin holds hope and the possibility of a new life, but will the ghosts of Greta's past destroy any chance of a future? Christine, that's quite an intro to that book.
Yes, because I really wanted to put across that this was a young girl that actually changed into a woman during the ending of World War II. And actually, when World War II ended in Europe, it didn't actually end on the day that World War II ended. There were loads of communities that were hungry, starving. There was a lot of retribution going on. And the story basically is Greta, who's 14 years old, her single mum and her younger brother Hans, running across Germany, escaping the invading armies and the retreating armies. So actually they're trying to survive.
Yeah, a survivor hell, no doubt. I've got a couple of questions. I'm going to rewind just a little bit.
Yeah.
So, first of all, I want to know what made you become a journalist.
I always wrote short stories as a child, and my mother encouraged me to do that. And I had a very brief time with the civil service, extremely brief. I hated it in the typing pool. And then a job came up at the Portsmouth News, and my mother saw it in the Portsmouth News because she was an avid newsreader, and she said, apply for that. And I got that job. And in those days, you started out as almost the equivalent of a runner. You were going from the photographic department to the news department, going out with reporters and basically doing everything, really. Initially, I then ended up actually in the photographic department, actually printing off all the photographs that the news journalists went out and took. And those were the days when you actually printed on huge enlarges. So it was 35mm and 120, not digital in those days, although obviously it did go over to digitalisation. And I at that time was actually the one female apprentice in the photographic department in the whole country. And when guys came down to take pictures of the Queen when it was her silver jubilee, they were actually shocked that there was a woman in the dark room. In those days, there was no sort of Photoshop or anything like that. If there was something not quite right about the photograph, we had a little tiny art set where we had to sort of colour out things that may be inappropriate, because in those days the editor was very conservative, so there was no cleavages or anything like that if ladies were showing a bit too much.
Okay, I'll have no comment about that. I want to know, why did you think it was important to write a book about the lives of German women and European women during World War II?
Well, 20 years ago, when there was the big anniversary in Portsmouth for the 60th anniversary of the ending of World War II, when all the heads of state were in Portsmouth, obviously as a freelance journalist at that time, I was sent out on numerous stories. I interviewed veterans, I interviewed obviously people that went through the Blitz in Portsmouth, but I also was interviewing German women that actually had made their lives here in the UK. And from that came these marvellous stories of women that actually, after the ending of World War II, had met Allied service personnel in Germany, married them, and came to live either in the UK, America, Canada, across the sort of the world, really. And I felt that their stories needed to be told. But it's not just about them. It's about women's relationships with each other, themselves, and relationships with men during war and conflict.
Amazing. So what was it like talking to veterans, particularly like people like Ted Briggs, one of the few survivors of the HMS Hood sinking in World War II?
Well, it was amazing, really, because 1,200-plus men died when the Bismarck sank that battleship. It was considered one of the biggest naval disasters of the whole of World War II, and only three survived. And Ted was 19 years of age at that time, and he just described in depth what happened to him, how one minute he was on a ladder going up to the bridge, the next minute he was in the water, and then when he looked round, the boat was sinking vertically down like that.
My goodness.
And
gracious.
He said that horror stayed with him for 40 years plus, you know. And this is a thing that I think goes back to my book again. There's obviously English personnel and Allied servicemen in the book as well, and they talk about, you know, the horrors that they've seen as well. And I also interviewed, you know, there were very young guys then that were one of the first troops that relieved Bausen and places like that. So their stories were absolutely amazing. And, you know, Ted's obviously long gone now because we're a few years on now, but it was such a privilege and an extraordinary interview to talk to him. This is what I'm saying, ordinary people in extraordinary situations make the most wonderful stories and actually give a real insight in actually what those big events and what's happening in those big events.
Yeah, a scary thought to think you were one of three survivors.
Yeah, and the sort of the family connection with that, my step-grandfather, his son Jack actually went down on the Hood, and he was 18 years of age as well.
Goodness gracious. So you must have had conversations with your mum and dad about war.
Yes, yeah, because both my parents served. My father was born in Portsmouth, and he actually worked at de Havilland's and Airspeed, so he was always working in aircraft. So he was in a protective industry during World War II. But at 19, he wanted to sign up, and he signed up, and he joined the RAF, and he was based at Filton Airport, which was just outside Bristol, and that was integral to the Battle of Britain, because he was on Lancasters. And also the Americans actually built a lot of airplanes there and actually took a lot of the American casualties at Filton.
Certainly done your research, haven't you?
Yeah, and my mum was also in the WAFs. She was 10 years younger than my dad, so she joined sort of going into the Cold War almost. The Berlin Airlift, she was involved in that. She was in the WAFs at Cranwell. Yeah.
Okay. Is Women at War a standalone book, or will the lives of the characters live on in yet another book?
Well, it's a trilogy, really, because I got so quite interested with what was happening towards the end of their story when they actually came over to England, or the women actually married service personnel, went to America and that. Their stories are interweaved. So, yeah, there's what happened next, really, going into the Cold War. Because can you imagine, you're a German, very young girl, you've married an English army officer, and you come to England just after World War II, when there's a lot of resentment and discrimination towards anybody that's got an accent that is not English.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah. Funny enough, my mother was Austrian, and never got rid of her accent. Died at 91 years old, still with a real broad accent. Yeah. And she got some abuse occasionally. I remember that in my life growing up.
Yeah. Well, funny enough, the inspiration for the book, Greta, which is a 14-year-old girl, the lady that I interviewed, who was the inspiration for this book, when I first met her, she sat in her chair and she was very, very upright, and she had her hair in like a bun at the back, and she had quite an accent even then.
Can I ask you, was it deliberate to choose names like Greta, Helga, Hans, Hotel Parisienne for naming your characters in Women at War?
They were deliberately generic for all the Hans and the Gretas and Helgas that died, but also for all the women and children that are affected by war and conflict today. The book is actually dedicated to all women and children affected by conflict or war.
Let me just have a look at the cover. I haven't seen the book. Women at War, oh gosh, just a grey cover says it all, really, doesn't it?
Yes, and actually it came from the film that was used for that is an old Soviet film, because it's very much about the Soviets' involvement as well in the war.
Doesn't that say a lot? So little, but such a big message. Did you spend a lot of time yourself trying to get the image for the cover?
We did, with some help, really. I had a very good photographer that really helped me out with that as well. Yeah, because it had to be stark, because actually the book is very real. It's very real. What's it like to try and survive the ending of a world war when you've got no home, you're 14 years of age, your brother's only 9, and your mother is barely 30?
Absolutely. And what about a question like, so there's going to be a lot of sadness in this book, yet did you enjoy writing the book?
Yes, I did. And actually, it's a love story, and it's about the survival of love. So, yes, I really did enjoy writing the book, because I found out so much more about the discrimination, what went on with the US troops, the fact that if you were a Mexican or a black soldier, that you got paid a lot less and you would still be dying for your country. And the discrimination within the mobile hospitals, the field hospitals, because Greta does end up working as a nurse. She makes out that she's Jewish, and she ends up helping out at one of the mobile hospitals for the US Army.
Okay, I suppose I'm a bit guilty, really, of not having read the book yet, so I might ask a bit of the wrong question here, but I want to ask it. So as a journalist, are you writing as an author or as a journalist?
The facts in there are factual. These happened at that time. This woman was rescued by the 15th Scottish Brigade in Berlin because they were there. So this is historically factual, but it's inspired by a woman's story.
Amazing. It's been a great story that you've told, and really enjoyed talking with you. Everything has to come to an end, but we do want to know how people can get hold of your book.
Well, it's available now on Amazon for $8.99, or you can get it on Kindle on Amazon as well. And I'm also at Portsmouth Book Fest 2025 in March, where I will be signing books, but also talking about my experiences interviewing these women.
Okay, well, keep us up to date on that, and we can publicise that as and when it comes up. Christine, it's been a wonderful time having you in. Christine Lord and your book, Women at War. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
And the song that Christine has chosen is Dancing Queen from ABBA, and we'll be back with Laurie Westron right after this. Part two of Portsmouth Authors Collective with myself and Portsmouth Authors Collective founder Laurie Westron. As always, Laurie, how are you doing?
Good morning, Bob. I'm doing great.
Good morning to you. So I am really intrigued by a few things about authors. And the more that we do these book clubs, the more I want to know about authors. So obviously yourself as an author and all the authors that you know, where on earth do you get all your inspiration from?
Oh, life. I think that's the biggest inspiration. I mean, I suppose it depends on what sort of stories people are writing, you know, but certainly for me, you know, speaking personally, life, you know, things that happen, people that I meet, things that I read about in the newspaper, things that I overhear people talking about in the cafe.
Yeah, you've mentioned that before, you nosy lady.
I think that's it. I think I primarily take inspiration from, the world around me and you know, try and morph it into something, something else.
So let's sort of set the scene. So you're out, you're having a coffee and a little cake somewhere, Aunt Sally.
Oh, yes.
And you might overhear a conversation, as you say. Do you take notes?
Sometimes I do, sometimes, if there's like a particular phrase that I overhear that I think is interesting. So, what I'm not doing is I'm not going around the streets of Portsmouth, eavesdropping on people and stealing their stories. I'm not doing that at all.
But
it's just those little characteristics sometimes, and it could be as something as simple as the way somebody speaks or the way they move, the way they walk. Those sort of things can help to feed into a story.
Yeah, and as we were talking about overheard conversations, I guess it's just a moment in time, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And I guess for me, thinking about the project that I'm just finishing up now, the big inspiration from that came from history. So I'm very much interested in history. And, sometimes you meet these characters in a book, could be a textbook. It could be, anything, just a character, somebody who, kind of incites that first question. Well, what happened next? Or what made this person the way they are? That's a big one for me is, what made this person that way, and then inventing a backstory for them. So that would be something that's very fictional. I mean, I don't want to say that I am creating a fictional story for real people, but sometimes that does happen. For me, myself, I'm trying to create a fictional story that is as factually accurate as possible.
Okay. I guess it's intriguing, isn't it, for certainly for our listeners, certainly for me, that you might just hear one phrase and out of that comes a whole, plethora of words.
Oh, of course, yeah. I really pay a lot of attention to the rhythm of words. And, once you kind of, get into that rhythm, it's almost like you can kind of take on a character's personality in some way, and that's how I've been able to kind of access their mindset or their, their story.
Absolutely, yeah. So let's put you in another scenario. So you're sat down, you're having another cup of tea somewhere else, or a coffee, or a beer, and you're reading a newspaper. Do you get anything from real life?
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely. I've got a scrapbook at home where over the years I have, cut out really interesting things. So years ago, there was just a little, it's one of those kind of inch-long stories in the sidebar of something quirky that has happened. And it was a story about a priest in South America someplace anyway, who had decided he wanted to fly, and he had a lot of helium balloons, like children's helium balloons that he tied together. And I mean, this is years ago, this is, so I'm probably remembering this incorrectly, but that he tied these to his chair and floated out over the sea and was never heard from again.
And I was laughing. I wasn't expecting that.
Well, but I mean, just that image is like amazing.
A whole book.
And oh yeah. So I'm, that's one that has really stuck with me that I would love to write sometime.
It reminds me of that episode of Only Fools and Horses what's his name?
Rodney? Del Boy?
When Del Boy flew out on that hang glider and went right over to France. Anyway, another story. Interesting stuff on where your ideas come from.
It's always those questions, always those little snippets of stories that aren't complete that make you ask a question. And that's what gets you going. It's that, you know, what happened next or what happened before? And you know, and then a story develops from there.
Thanks, Laurie. Let's just play a bit of music and we will pick up on this interview after Adele. Set Fire to the Rain, Adele from 2011. Okay, so I've been talking with Laurie Westron from Portsmouth Authors Collective, and we'll pick up with that interview
We've occasionally talked about off-air about writing prompts. Explain that a little bit.
So, yeah, writing prompts are really good if a person is stuck, you know. So we've spoken before about writer's block and all of that. And writing prompts can be a good way to get a person unstuck.
So this is a technique, presumably.
Well, yeah. It's really easy, you know. So it might be, you know, take the third line on the page of the book that you're reading and continue the story from there, you know. And so it's little things like that, or it could be anything. But it's just a little snippet of a, you know, starting of a story, and then you carry it on.
So I guess that could potentially be a lesson in a creative workshop.
Oh yeah, and you'll find in workshops that, you know, people do those all the time. Yeah,
well, it really intrigued me, Laurie. I'm grateful that you've answered the questions as you have, and it's enlightened me somewhat. So, what's PAC up to? What have you been up to?
Well, so I had a book signing at the Cathedral on Friday, and that was really good. I enjoyed that because it's, of course, a beautiful environment. Spoke to a lot of lovely people there.
Well, it's okay speaking to them. Did they part with any money?
Well, a few of them did. Yes. Yeah. So that was good as well. And so this Sunday, the 17th of November, is the Portsmouth Authors Collective Book Fair at the Aspects Gallery in Gun Wharf.
Okay, tell us more about that.
So we're going to be there 11 to 4 o'clock, and there will be 25 authors, all, you know, having their own table of books.
This sounds good.
So I will be there with my one little book, and other people will be there with, you know, three or four or five books. So it's a, you know, it will be a really good day, I think. Christine forgot to mention this, but Christine Lord will be there with her book, with Women at War, and I think also she has another book, a memoir, which will be there as well. But yeah, so that's exciting.
Is Gillian coming down from London? Gillian?
Yes, I believe she is. So yeah, it will be good to see her as well.
Yeah, that, what was that? That was Bumweed.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, uh-huh. It's a good book.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else coming up?
Yeah. And then the following weekend, the 23rd and 24th of November, we are going to be at Boathouse Number 5 at the Dockyards. And so that's going to be a fantastic Christmas event. Again, lots of things going on, lots of activities and entertainment and food and a lot of traders, crafts and clothes and books and all sorts of things will be there.
Brilliant. That sounds like a good day out all on its own. And so how do you get all these books to these book fairs? You only ride a bike?
Well, I was planning to, you know, pedal on down to the Aspects with my books and so forth, because I can actually carry my books on my bike, no problem. But no, for some of the larger events, I really depend on other members to help me out, because I've got tables to transport, you know, several containers of books that I take around down to different markets with us. And so there's kind of a lot of stuff, actually, that has my load has grown, I should say.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I've got one person in particular, Steve Shepherd, who has been, honestly, he's been an absolute diamond. I honestly don't know what I would have done without him. And, you know, he comes down from Petersfield, so he has to leave home extra early in the morning so that he can come and collect me up at, very early hour, and so that we can get there and get ourselves all sorted out.
Laurie, it's, as ever, pleasure to have you in. We've actually not just run out of time, we've run way over time.
Way over, I know.
So I have to say farewell, and thank you for coming in, as always.
Oh, very good to see you, Bob.
I just want to add, if you missed any of that interview from Portsmouth Authors Collective, myself, Laurie Westron, and Christine Lord, you can get it on catch-up after the show has ended. So this show ends at midday, and around about 10 minutes after that, the show will repopulate on the website, victoryonline.co.uk. Look for the catch-up link, go to this show, Morning Call, and today's date, and you can then hear it either all over again, or indeed you can catch up with it from the catch-up link.